Blog Talk Radio.
Good Sunday morning, everybody. My name is Missa Dixon, and this is Mrs. Urban Home, the show where we are changing lives one extraordinary topic at a time. This week, we're supposed to have Stephen Zimmer on. I hope he gets in touch with us. He has not called in yet, so hopefully he will be with us. That would be nice. Hopefully this is him. Stephen!
Yes.
Yes, you are here. Yay!
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you just fine.
Okay,
worried there for a minute. Yeah, I was a little worried there for a minute, but...
I've actually been trying to call in, I swear.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry. It's a thing. Well, let me get through the first part of the show, the greeting kind of thing. I do have to be honest with you. I only did the greeting last week because the person didn't call in. My guest didn't call in. I've had 96 people listen to the greeting in 1 week.
Oh. I am here for the show.
Excellent, excellent, good, because I got 5 pages to grill you with, baby.
Oh dear.
It was shocking when I started prepping for the show. All right, so today's show we have you on, Mr. Zimmer, and I'm very excited to talk to you for a lot of reasons. We got to get through the other stuff first. The weather. Well, as most of you know, I live down here in the south, and it is warm and moist. Really, it is the steamy hot tub sexiness in my backyard, and none of it is sexy because it's just all dripping wet. It's kind of gross. Yes, I did get a squeaky toy. It was a struggle. I won't even lie to you. I had not one but 2 squeaky toys down this week, and he hid both of them, one under the couch and one way back in my bedroom, which he never takes the toys to, ever, ever, ever. But he was very upset when I found that second squeaky toy because he was all about keeping the squeaky toy for the show. Well, Richard, you can't keep the squeaky toy. I'm sorry, you just can't do it, sweetheart. My thankful moment for this week, I do have one. Very nice. I realized I had guns this week, and let me explain that to you. I started a new program. Most of you know that I've been doing the whole health type thing recently, and I'm continuing that march to health, wealth, and happiness. I'm doing Body for Life, which is like sort of the part 2 of this thing. And after 2 weeks, I have guns. No, like, real live guns. And for those of you who are clueless about that concept, like I was until 2 weeks ago, I have, like, arm muscles. I have, like, biceps and triceps and quads and stuff. I mean, who knew that actually happened? But I actually now have those, which is, I'm very happy about, really and truly. I do not have a pointing moment this week because I'm going to rant next week. You know, I told y'all that I was going to have a surprise for you on the 20th. You know, it is Father's Day. And, I do, for all those kind of holidays, I do a rant, and I'm going to rant next week. I'm not going to tell you what it's about. You got to come and listen, but I'm going to rant. And on the 27th, Diana will be here. She's going to be talking houseplants with us and how to take care of your houseplants inside. Because I don't know about you, but y'all email me questions about houseplants all the time. And, you know, that is an extraordinary topic, and you're absolutely correct, people. I'm going to cover it. And then on July 4th, Lane Jennings is going to be here. My good friend Lane Jennings, she's going to be here, and we're going to be talking about the power of positive thinking because she is all about the power of positive thinking at this moment, and so am I, considering, no, seriously, I have biceps. Do you see this? I should, like, put a picture of my biceps on my website and let y'all see my biceps because I am shocked and horrified by my biceps. I really am. I'm like, wow, that's incredible. All right. Onward to the meat of the show, why everybody showed up today. Mr. Zimmer, Stephen Zimmer, is on the show today. And in the realm of full disclosure, I met Stephen at MidSouthCon several years ago, but I met him officially this time. He came to a panel I did on podcasting, and I had heard of him for several years, so it was my surprise he had some questions for me, which I was very surprised about. And then he showed up with the cutest cars I've ever seen, and we are going to talk about that. Because I thought it was brilliant. But so welcome to the show, Stephen. Thank you so much.
Well, it is great to be here, Missa. I was very much looking forward to it.
Oh, absolutely. I love your work at this point. I really do. So please tell us a bit about yourself so we can kind of get the show started.
Well, I am an epic fantasy writer, and my series that has a new book out is the Epic Urban Fantasy, so it's very appropriate for coming into Mrs. Urban Home, so bad joke there. But I also am a filmmaker, and so I'm a writer and a filmmaker, and that definitely takes up quite a big chunk of my time, and I reside in Lexington, Kentucky, and right now I'm just out promoting the new book, The Storm Guardians, and I'm actually calling live from Borders on Eastgate Boulevard in Cincinnati, Ohio right now, where I'm going to be doing a signing in a couple hours.
Yeah, so it's like, what, 2 o'clock their time, correct?
2 o'clock, yeah, Eastern time.
Yeah, so if you're listening today, because I know a lot of you hop on the podcast on Mondays and Tuesday mornings, I don't exactly understand what you're doing on Monday and Tuesday mornings, besides being at work, but, you know, listening to the show, which is always nice. Go down to Borders in Cincinnati and and get a book, because they're really cool. I bought all 3 on Monday, so really good stuff. All right, so you have a lot going on. You have 3 genres of current projects that I know about. We're going to get to each one very specifically, but you have 3 books out, working on a 4th, correct?
Yes. Well, the way it's going, I have 2 fantasy series, and they kind of leapfrog each other on the release schedule. So about every 7 months, I have a new book out, and about a little over every year, I'll have a new book out in each series. So the next one up is going to be the follow-up to Crown of Vengeance in the Fires and Eden series, and that's the more medieval epic fantasy series. And then next summer, you know, we'll get out the next one in the Rising Dawn saga.
Mm-hmm. So that's... I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just saying that's kind of the pattern that we're going to have for the next couple of years.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that because we had actually talked about that on Monday, and it's something I wanted to bring up for other people who are writing because I'm writing 2 books as well and doing the same thing you're doing. You also have a podcast. Is that correct?
Yes. Being out and traveling quite a bit to both film and also book literary conventions and mixed media conventions, I've started doing more podcasting, and one is more oriented toward the book and author side of things, and one is oriented more toward the film side of things. So, you know, one I do with a group called Indie Movie Masters that I'm a part of, and the other one is I actually kind of commandeered the blog site for Seventh Star Press, which is my publisher.
Right. Okay. And you also are a filmmaker. And I did not realize how much of a filmmaker until a mutual friend of ours, Alan Gilbert, Friday night was over and discussing some stuff. And he's like, no, we have to work out really hard because I might be a bad guy. And I was like, really? So you are seriously into film correct?
Yes. I'm a writer and director, and then sometimes I have to wear other hats just in the course of, you know, getting independent projects done. So I've been a producer, and I've done a number of other jobs in terms of film production. But, you know, my core is as a writer director.
Excellent. All right, well, let's talk about writing first. Since you put out tomes, as I'd like to call them, but let's talk about writing first.
Sure.
And then we'll go on to a little bit of podcasting, then a little bit of movie, and hopefully if we get through everything, because trust me, when I started prepping for the show, I was like, well, you know, I try to have a decent mix of questions and get everything out. Steve, you're a tome.
Yeah.
I've got 5 pages here. Good grief.
Okay, we'll talk fast then, and I'll keep my answers succinct.
I was like, oh, my God. All right, let's talk about writing first. How did you become a writer?
Sure. Sorry. I became a writer from being just a reader and a lover of stories. I mean, really. I mean, the roots started when, you know, my mother started reading me the Lord of the Rings trilogy at the age of 7. And, you know, just...
Lord of the Rings! Oh, all right, I'm
yeah.
Sorry. Now we can go on.
And followed by Chronicles of Narnia. That was the next series my mom introduced me to when I was really young. So, that sort of did it, and, you know, so I blame her for being a fantasy writer, and so, I mean, you know, I think that was the foundation, and, you know, I had written things, you know, coming up through high school and college, but, you know, I hadn't gotten to the point where I thought, you know, I was, you know, in a point where, you know, I could take something to an editor or a publisher until just, you know, even a few years ago, and so, you know, it took a long time to get to that point, but, yeah, I've been rooted in it pretty much most all my life.
Excellent. What does writing do for you? I've talked to a lot of writers on this show. I talk to a lot of people on the show. I talk to a lot of people anyway. I'm kind of that way. And a lot of people, this show is very dedicated into finding your green line, so to speak. You know, there's a commercial out there. I don't even know what it's for, but it's people on their green line. And that's a lot of what this show is. So what does writing do for you?
do for me. I'm actually at my happiest when I'm you know, deep into a writing project. I mean, I really do, you know, kind of immerse into, you know, and that's obviously why I end up coming up with these big tomes, as you call them. But yeah, I immerse into, you know, my work when I'm doing it, and really get into it really deeply in terms of a mental state and imagination and so forth. So for me, it's very liberating. It's just what I absolutely am at my happiest.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. So when did you discover you liked writing?
I would say it was probably when I discovered that I liked writing. Probably it was almost when I was toward the end of my high school years and just beginning into my college years. And that's when I started to, you know, do some speculative fiction, short stories, and started my, and actually did a draft of a novel at that point, but all of which will probably never see the light of day. Hopefully those are kind of locked up in my vault for, you know, because they definitely were my early stuff. But you know, it's probably about that time that I started, getting, I think what you'd say, more serious or more, structured.
Right, right. Excellent. Yeah, because, you know, those first writings, oh, my God, you know, we all are humiliated by that. How has your writing developed? I mean, have you always written about fantasy, urban fantasy, sci-fi, that kind of stuff, or has it evolved throughout your career?
Yes, I have always been speculative fiction, and actually the first draft of the first novels that I wrote, the ones that I told you probably will never see the light of day unless they have a major overhaul, but looking back at them, they actually are urban fantasy. They're epic scale urban fantasy. So I guess you could say, yeah, I mean, that's that was actually the first attempt before I even did something in medieval fantasy. Several years before the urban fantasy genre really kind of kicked in. So yeah, I've always had that kind of mindset and been kind of pointed in that direction. And definitely the first things I wrote were mixed, you know, that and some things that were in horror and kind of modern fantasy.
Oh, excellent, excellent, excellent. Yeah, because that's very interesting. Your writing, I have not made it through the Exodus Gate yet. We're going to talk about that in a minute because it's a tome, but we're going to talk about it. I noticed the one thing, before we get to actually talking about the actual two sagas you have going on, I have to compliment you on something. I noticed you include a lot of mythos in your work. And the two mythos that I am probably the biggest fan of in the universe is, especially from a metaphysical point of view, and I do a lot of metaphysics stuff in my universe, is the Nephilim and Avatars. And we're not talking the big blue things either, people. Before everybody goes, what are we talking about?
Yeah.
No. We're talking about the Hindu type concept of deity coming down. So, why did you use them and not some other types of super beings like elves and everything else? Why did you choose the Nephilim, which are biblical, and we're going to talk about what those are in a minute because I'm going to let you describe that better than I can probably, and avatars, which are also this kind of fallen deity kind of thing. Why did you choose those as your super beings?
Well, I've always been fascinated with the Nephilim, and in college I had read the Book of Enoch, which interestingly was considered scriptural by the early Christian church, and at one point was considered authoritative by Jewish communities as well. I mean, I believe the oldest fragment they have actually dates about 200 BC, I think, of the Book of Enoch. And it is just filled with just amazing lore about the Watchers and the Nephilim and so forth. And because I got sparked into finding that, because they actually are mentioned in the biblical book of Genesis. There's one line that talks about, you know, the sons of, you know, sons of man coming down and laying with the, you know, daughters of, you know, and so forth. And, you know, more or less just a reference to some celestial beings, you know, kind of mating with humans, and these offspring were giants, and it kind of infers that even the, you know, the great flood was, you know, part of the reason for that was because of them. And so so the Book of Enoch I found interesting because it was kind of, now it's considered apocryphal, you know, by, you know, people of the Christian faith, you know, they, you know, point, you know, and they finally settled on the books of the Bible. it was kind of pushed aside. And but actually, it's quoted in the New Testament. It's writers in the Old Testament. The way the Old Testament is written assumes that the reader is familiar with the Book of Enoch. So I found it very, very interesting, you know, this particular, you know, thing. And that kind of was where I started with the Nephilim. And, of course, I've always found a lot of correlations with the, you know, legends of the Anunnaki, you know, with Sumerian, Babylonian type, you know, lore. And I've seen some, you know, some parallels between the stories of the Nephilim and the stories of the Anunnaki and so forth. So I, you know, that's kind of where it started, and, you know, and just doing a lot of kind of research. And then, you know, and then I didn't want to just, you know, retell, you know, a story that's already there. So, you know, I kind of, you know, adopted it to my own little world in the Rising Dawn saga.
Absolutely. It did a good job, I got to be honest with you, because the Nephilim, Avatars, the Anunnaki, and there's other groups as well out there. Every culture has this, a lot of cultures, I shouldn't say every culture, has this concept of deity or other beings coming down and breeding with humans. I just thought it was really good, because that's something that's very close to my heart, so to speak. Just in case somebody doesn't know what the Nephilim and Avatars are, can you explain those ideas from the historical point of view? Because your book takes a slightly different, your books actually take a slightly different view of it, but can you tell me what the historical view is?
The historical view, as far as the Nephilim are, that, you know, they were a race of, you know, giants, basically, and that's kind of the image that you get from the historical, you know, text that exists. But, you know, the offspring of, you know, celestial beings, you know, referred to, you know, in the Bible, sons of man. Some think it's fallen angels and so forth. So there's, you know, some speculation on it, but they were definitely, you know, kind of a hybrid, and kind of like a hybrid offspring. And so, you know, that's about as much, you know, in terms of the Nephilim lore that you get. And, you know, with Avatars, I think you've already, you know, you already touched on that a bit, you know, the idea of, you know, kind of like, you know, beings that, you know, are, well, an Avatar, you know, in mine, you know, I have adopted them a little bit differently. They're kind of like a mix between like an angelic being and some other things. But you know, you've touched on it well, you know, I think already, as far as like the idea of a, you know, a higher being, you know, coming down and, you know, assuming a form, you know, in terms of, you know, this world, and you know, from its you know, core yeah, pure spiritual element.
Right. Yeah. In your book, you glom on other things. Although I will admit, that I have not finished Exodus Date, which is the book one of the Rising Dawn saga. And don't give me crap, people. Seriously, I got this book on Monday. Okay. Yeah. And on the next question, you're going to find out why I didn't finish it yet. Okay. but I will finish it because it's really awesome. And your other books too. I'm kind of excited to see your medieval fiction as well. So can you give us an overview of the Rising Dawn saga and this Exodus Gate? And the next title is Storm Guardians, am I correct?
Yes, Storm Guardians is the brand new one, and that's the one I'm here at Borders today, you know, doing the signing for, and that's the one that just got released last week, you know, so it's brand new. And
really?
Yes, literally. Yeah.
Here, you see that? Hear that wind? That's the book itself, people. All right. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it is epic scale urban fantasy, and it all starts, and some of the genesis of it starts with my love of you know, Coast to Coast AM, and growing up, my grandmother listened to it religiously, you know, late night, and she introduced me actually to Art Bell and all that, and so it's kind of, you know, that's where kind of the idea started. But it's, you know, the idea of a guy that has a show like that, who kind of gets brought into an entire, you know, kind of epical story, where all the things that he's covering on his show are, you know, kind of reflected within the plot and you know, in the context of the story itself. So, you know, it definitely, you know, it is a, you know, kind of a, you know, apocalyptic kind of story, but do not confuse it with like Left Behind series or things like that. Very, very different. but it's, you know, it is a, you know, kind of an apocalyptic, you know, kind of story. It's, that's the kind of backdrop. There's a cosmic war going on between force, you know, the, you know, forces from the abyss and kind of a light higher realm, you know, that we refer to in it. And then there's a middle plane of existence called Purgatorian, which is, you know, where, you know, have a lot of fun, and there's some, you know, key characters that exist within it. And then of course Earth, you know, where there's actually a group that's looking to, you know, establish a one world kind of legal and economic system. And that's the group that designed this virtual reality device, which falls into the hands of Benedict Darwin, the radio show host, you know, who doesn't at first know what it is, but it's actually a time transcending gate that's been designed with the intent to bring the Nephilim back and save them from the destruction of the Great Flood. And so that's kind of how the Exodus gate, you know, kind of kicks off, and then it, you know, just starts spreading and growing, you know, from that point, and, you know, getting you more familiar with, you know, what's going on Earth, what's going on in the non-physical realms, and, you know, and then brings in, you know, what I would say is an ensemble cast of characters.
Yes. It is not quite a Russian novel of characters, but we're close. It was very funny because I know on Monday you'd mentioned Russian novels, and I was like, oh, okay. And then I started reading Exodus Gate, and I was like, I understand the influence. Yeah. But unfortunately, you really have to have that. Your world is so expansive. It is so interesting. It is so, it's such a great, as I term it, it's such a great playground. That you really, really needed all of this. You need all of that, and it's awesome. It definitely sucks you right in.
And it may seem, you know, like at first for some readers that, you know, may not, you know, read this type of fantasy, it may seem a little daunting with the number of characters and so forth, but my threads flow from book to book to book, and so everything builds on what's come before. And so as you get into it and keep going, everything, you know, you're going to build on what you've already built. You know, it's not going to start just scattering. I mean, the threads will remain tight, and, you know, so that definitely will help.
Absolutely, and it's not, and those people who don't know urban fantasy has a lot of characters in it. If you think back to some of the movies that have been dealing with almost pure urban fantasy, Johnny Mnemonic, some of the other films, there were a lot of characters in there because they are required, and it is extremely important. And you kind of, and it's a good. I love the mental exercise. I have to be honest with you. I do love it, and it's a great story. It's fascinating. It definitely sucks you in. Well, I got to be honest with you. This is the next question I have. And those people going, well, I don't know why she couldn't finish that book. Well, the book is well worth the money for it. It is 600 pages and a 5x9. For those people in the publishing industry, it's a tome. Really, it's a tome. And you've got three of these. I got to ask you how you have time to write that. But why do you write such long epic works? What draws you to that epicness, that whole Lord of the Rings plethora pantheon of words and story and just absolute coolness?
I think because simply life is epic, you know, when you stand back from it. I mean, obviously every person doesn't, you know, involve themselves with every aspect of everything that's going on around them. But even with a family, you step back and, you know, or, you know, friends and step back and see each little worlds that they're a part of in their daily lives and how those intersect and overlap. And there's, you know, things that they're a part of that are even bigger than that. And I think life itself is a very epical kind of quality, you know, when you start, you know, seeing the spread, you know, of all the circles that we're in and how those circles are part of bigger circles. And so, you know, and ultimately, you know, it comes to a, you know, large overarching kind of, you know, story of life. And so for me, it's probably, in at least for me, it's probably the most pure, you know, approach for me, you know, to try to do like a story, you know, and try to set, you know, characters within the context of something greater and show the, you know, the different parts that we all have to play within that greater story. So that's my appeal.
Excellent. Well, it does, it works very well. And I got to be honest, you really nailed the genre, at least in the urban fantasy, and I guarantee you in the historical fantasy too, that you've nailed the genre very, very well. I mean, superbly. For those people interested in, and I love the fact he was a radio show host. Oh, God, your main character's name is escaping me. But he's really sitting there.
Benedict Darwin.
He's he's that whole late night. What you remember from at least the in my view that the 90s, that late night over the country late night talk show host kind of person doing paranormal stuff that I actually was influenced with as well. You just captured that just really, really, really well. And of course, the Evil Corporation and all that kind of good stuff is just really, really awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome.
Yeah, with a twist, because the head of that evil corporation is actually a practitioner of, you know, darker arts, who's kind of steeped into the darker side of mystical realms, you know. So she Dajian is who you're referring to, I think, and she actually is one of my favorite characters. I mean, she's, you know, obviously, you know, more on the villainous side, but she's fun because she's both a force to be reckoned with in the corporate world, and then also has this other side where she's a force to be reckoned with as a supernatural, in terms of supernatural powers that she wields. I mean, she is a human character, but she's definitely interesting in terms of, you know, that kind of hybrid between modernity and the paranormal.
Absolutely. It's very fascinating. I can't wait to get into her. I'm about two-thirds of the way done, and she is fascinating, I have to be honest with you. You also have another series. It's called The Fires of Eden, and the first book of that is called The Crown of Vengeance. Can you tell us about that series? It is very different from the Rising Dawn saga.
Yes, and it's intended to be. I mean, I definitely, you know, want readers to have a different, you know, experience. I mean, it style-wise, structure-wise, it's similar. I mean, it's still multi-threaded kind of style and, you know, still large epical story, but it's very different in terms of, you know, this one follows, 11 human characters arranged from a guy that owns a Chinese restaurant all the way to, you know, a couple of ladies that are in college to, you know, to a teenage boy, and this group of characters find themselves in a thick mist one night. When the mist parts, they're in different places, of course, and when the mist parts, they find themselves in this fantastical world called Ave, and they find themselves in two different lands, one that is based on, you know, the Iroquois, and then one that's based on the Saxons, and both of those lands are on the verge of being invaded by forces that are loyal to a character called the Unifier. And so the whole, you know, epic evolves in terms of round of why they got taken, you know, out of their own world into this world, why they are there, what their function is. And that's where the plot starts to, you know, weave right there. And it does have things that people connect with. I mean, we do have a kind of like a wizard race in it, and there are dragons in the series and some things that are, you know, more, you know, conventional fantasy. But then we also have some, you know, different kind of creatures and races and things like that that are, you know, I think pretty, you know, have their own little original take that people may not have encountered too often before. So it's got a nice balance between, you know, things that are kind of new that fantasy readers haven't been dealing a lot with, and then it's also got, you know, some things that all fantasy readers can connect with. So I think it's, you know, in that sense, you know, it's got a nice appeal.
Excellent. Yeah, I can't wait. I wanted to get through, since Exodus Gate was you've got the new book was out in that series. I wanted to get that read first. But I got to be honest, for me, historical fantasy is, or the high fantasy type stuff is really, you know, I like that stuff. You know, I'm a girl. What can you do? one of the things I want to do, that I want to talk about with you, is that we sat down on Monday and we talked about a very interesting discussion. I am currently writing two books and you've got two series out, and we talked about the interestingness of that hopscotching. And one of the things, if you're a writer, I think we kind of hit on something that helps people write better, faster, more efficiently, and with more flow. We talked about writing two things at once was actually helpful.
Mm-hmm. And I like the term hopscotching, by the way. I have to coin that phrase because that does describe it pretty well.
You know, yeah, I like the point because that's kind of the way I felt, is that I was I'm hopscotching because I just finished all of my interviews for Interviews from the Ark, where I'm interviewing animals,
mm-hmm.
and then I'm going back to Redneck Enlightenment to get that polished up and the final rough draft done of it. And so that hopscotching kind of thing, and it just really, you know, we talked about that, the refreshing part of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, with me, it's the thing that I've discovered. I didn't intend it that way, but doing two series is when I wrote one book, then hop to the next, and then you know, kind of like hopscotching or leapfrogging. What it does is it gives you like a refreshment. It allows you to revisit the series kind of with a rested, recharged, refreshed perspective. And I found that I pick up a lot when I start doing the passes that you know before I give it over to my editor, and things that I probably wouldn't have caught if I was just kind of going on a continuum where I'm so immersed in it that you get a little blind sometimes, you get a little tunnel vision, and that's what editors save you from, you know. But doing this hopscotching, I noticed that I'm also able to catch, you know, some things, and also looking at it from, you know, a fresher perspective, I'm also able to see some ways I can, you know, deepen some things or possibly even, you know, develop a new thread or, you know, some things that I think can improve the book. And so, yeah, it definitely gives you kind of like a recharge.
Absolutely. Yeah, I have that same thing. And I did not, as people contact the show, you know, wanting writing hints, and, you know, I do cons as well. And I don't do much in the writing track. I do mostly podcasting and the Freaks and Geeks, which is, you know, hard science and paranormal tracks. But definitely as a suggestion to writers or anybody writing, I would suggest actually running two things concurrently. Even if you're not going to publish one, run it concurrently because of just how much fresh eyes you have when you go back to the other project.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And if you can catch those things before your editors do, your work gets out so much faster. It flows better. It is a more positive process, and I have to agree with you about how that is. And definitely you can use hopscotching because I plan on it.
Yeah. Well, editors tend also to love you when you hand real clean copy over to them. That makes them much, much happier.
Yeah. So. I have a learning disability in spelling and reading, so when I hand it to my editor, they're always like, oh, my God. We're going to die. It's a great story. And it held me back for years because I could, you know, I didn't read well. I didn't feel I wrote well. I'm a great, but, you know, with some encouragement of friends and enemies that I decided to get out there. So trust me, I like this hopscotching concept, and we need to co-promote that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's go on to podcasting now. Because you are my first person who does other podcasting. I'm so excited. I've never met anybody else who does podcasting. And I felt like always a little freak because I was the only one I knew.
Yeah. Oh, you're okay. You're okay. There's a few out there.
I know. How long have you been doing podcasting?
Only in the past about year have I been, you know, starting to build a collection of podcasts. And I don't do them as religiously as like you with a definitive like weekly show. But what I do is, you know, I try to do develop like a features. And I do have a format within the show. But what I want to do is build a nice archive of spotlights on, you know, artists and you know, both of the writing variety and the filmmaking variety. So, you know, and I'm out there traveling, meeting people, and I just thought it would be fun to start doing that because I do have a little bit of a media background, and I thought it would be kind of fun to, you know, kind of integrate that into what I'm doing and kind of give people a perspective on some, you know, independent artists that, you know, that I've discovered just in being out in the convention circuit.
Right. I got to be honest with you, that is the most fun of going to cons, of meeting people and going, no, seriously, I want to tell the world about you. Admittedly, my podcast is small, 300 listeners, although this week y'all kind of shocked me going up there with 375 listeners this week. But, I really like that too. You have two podcasts, correct? You have one that's based in literature and one that's based in film. How did you come up with the idea of doing a podcast instead of, you know, other things? How did you get to podcasting as your medium?
Just because I think, you know, for me at least, you know, in getting some done, it's not as crazy as doing like something video wise in terms of, you know, where you have to be in the spot with the person you're interviewing. You know, you can do a phone interview or so forth. And so for me, you know, that was just a more efficient medium to work with.
Yeah, I like that too. I like that about podcasting. I've talked to people almost all over the world now, interviewed almost everybody, you know, around the world. And I really like that. I also like the fact that you can download it. A lot of my listeners listen Monday and Tuesday morning at work. I guess maybe I shouldn't bust them out like that. But a lot of people download my podcast on Monday and Tuesday mornings. And sometimes, you know, Wednesday, you know, kind of capers off through the week. But, you know, I tell you, Monday morning, you know, and podcasting allows people to do that. And I really like that.
Well, that's what I meant by an archive, too, is because it exists. And anything I do when I'm blogging, when I do a review or a feature on somebody or do a podcast, I view that as something that they will have to use in their press kits or if people are trying to look up more information about them. But it's something that I intend to keep there permanently, you know, as long as possible, at least, for them, you know, for the various filmmakers or authors, so people can definitely look up more about them. Yeah, that's definitely part of the function of it that I love.
Yeah, I love being able to promote people. I think that mainstream has become very very pablum-y, and there isn't any way around it. In fact, one of the reasons I didn't get to your book all the way is because I had to read Twilight because my nephew wanted to read Twilight, and and I was like, okay, is this book appropriate? I hadn't seen the movie or anything else. So I had to go run through that book pretty quickly because my nephew wanted to read it. He wanted to read the whole series over the summer so he could get the A&R points for school. But having that is very important for me as well. Having that ability to go out and help people promote themselves is a really big deal. So, how often do you podcast?
I try to do, you know, not as scheduled as you, but try to do, you know, a couple of months or so. That's what I try to produce, and so I guess every other week or so, I try to do one like a feature.
Excellent. Where can we find out your podcasties?
Oh, podcasting. There are links from, you can look up blogs and podcasts, both that I've done on IndieMovieMasters.com, and that's the film-oriented one, or just go to my publisher site at 7th Star Press, and that's 7 with a TH, Star Press, .com, and that one, you know, you can find a link to blogs and podcasts, and I'll take you to the blog site, which also, you know, lists the podcast, so it kind of keeps them together.
Excellent. Yeah, that's a good idea. I do Blog Talk Radio, of course, and I like that because it's all in one spot. It's not,
yeah.
I don't have one for Kerlak, I don't have this, I don't have that, I have this. And I really like that. I have a question about publishing. You went with 7-Star Press, which is a small press publisher, just like
yes.
I work with. Why did you go small press?
The reason I went small press is simply because I'm not, you know, as a writer, I was not heavily connected with all kinds of, you know, links to, you know, major agents and or, you know, New York based publishers. And I've, you know, and I'm very aware that, you know, when you get put on a slush pile, you may be a good writer, but you may, you know, it may take 2 years before you find out that they didn't even read your book on the slush pile. So it's a bit daunting. And I did want to at least, you know, get my, you know, career underway instead of feeling like I was in limbo and, you know, somewhere I could work, you know, keep honing my craft and, you know, and have a little bit of awareness going on into what I do. So for me, small press is definitely the solution, especially today, because the major presses, you can talk to many mid-list authors that have either had their projects frozen or they've been cut loose. The roster of authors has been shrinking at the major presses and you know, that many have been, you know, set free. And so, you know, it's not the greatest of times to, you know, be seeking to be picked up by a major press. I mean, they're definitely with the economic times, they're definitely a lot more conservative in, you know, what they're doing right now. So small press is actually, you know, I think where a lot, you know, kind of the new frontiers are. You know, that's where a little bit more of the risk taking is taking place, a little bit more of the, you know, ideas are a little more out of the box. And you know, and there's, and you know, in terms of quality, the kind of books that are being put out are every bit as good as the major press releases. I mean, they really are. I mean, in terms of the, you know, the if you want to use the word product itself, I mean, it is it does hold up to the major stuff.
I actually think it's a little bit better because of the speculative nature of some of it. Because I, you know, as reading Twilight, I'm like going, wow, this is very mainstream. And having my nephew read it, I was okay with him reading mainstream stuff, but really it's mainstream. And for mm-hmm. those of us who aren't quite all about the mainstream, or may have a little bit differences, it really, in some ways, it rubbed me the wrong way. Stephanie's a great, trust me, it was very well written. And all that kind of stuff, but it wasn't edgy in any way.
No, and that's precisely because the major presses, they really can't take too many risks right now with the, you know, like I said, with all the losses that they've incurred and, you know, and shrinking and so forth. So they're going to be more something that they kind of have a bit of a projection that, you know, okay, this is going to sell because, you know, things like this have sold in the past. They're going to be a little bit more cautious in what they release, you know, and put their, you know, big investment into. So it's more of a function of the business structure, I think, in terms of why that is. And where a small press, you know, they have to make a name for themselves by being a little bit different. So, you know, they have to stand out in some way. And so I think that actually encourages, you know, the small press to try to get out there with something a little new and a little fresh and a little original.
Right. A little edgier for those people who like that. And that includes children's work, includes every genre. So I'm always glad to see small press. I really am. All right, let's go on to film. Let's go on to filmmaking. You are a filmmaker, and I did not actually know that about you until relatively recently. How did you get into filmmaking?
Filmmaking, it goes back to that old thing about, you know, picking up the old home video camera around the house and kind of messing around with friends and making very bad little vignettes and short pieces and stuff. But
and all this kind of stuff. I know.
There is that. But as it evolved and I started to actually learn what I'm doing with a camera and, you know, camera technique and, you know, learn, you know, how to get good quality audio, I started to, you know, evolve and to the point where, you know, by the time I was going to college, I ended up getting a visual communications degree, and which focused on, you know, among other things, you know, also, you know, video and film and so forth. And so, yeah, and then after that, you know, I worked in, you know, started doing a lot of things like with docs and documentary and commercial production. And, you know, that's, you know, so it kind of, you know, evolved from there. And, but, you know, as a storyteller, though, I always want to do narrative film. And so, you know, so that's been something that's been on my agenda for quite a while, until the point that I finally got a situation where I could write and direct a, you know, a narrative feature and, you know, and the other things.
Mm-hmm. What films have you made?
The two that have been released, and you know, I have done a lot of short film and documentary work and things like that, but they didn't, you know, really get, you know, what I would call a release. But the two things that are out there that one could find on like Netflix or Amazon or you know, in, or other places, are Shadows Light, which is kind of a modern fantasy / supernatural thriller. It's not a horror movie. And I think one of the things that I think was a mistake that when it was put out, they actually serviced several review copies to strictly horror film places, and that I think kind of hurt it when it came out, because it's not that type of movie. It's definitely, you know, a supernatural thriller / modern fantasy, and it's a feature, and it's got quite a few special effects for an indie film that was done on a smaller budget. And then the other one is definitely kind of plays like a Twilight Zone horror kind of episode, but it's a 32-minute short called The Sirens, and that was a blast to do, and that's on the Indie Movie Masters Festival of Horrors Volume 1 DVD. That's a bit of a mouthful to say, but it's a series that spotlights independent filmmakers, and there's actually a couple more volumes in that series coming out this year, not with my own projects on it, but some other filmmakers. But those are the two that are out there.
Excellent. I would love to see them. I don't know where I can get them, but I will attempt to, because, you know, and figure out how to use my DVD player. As a person, it's very funny. I don't do much. Most people know that I don't do much media. But when I tell you I don't do much media, I don't do much media. I mean, it's books, it's the computer, it's podcasting. You know, other than that, I have a TV. It's hanging on the wall right now. I'm waving at it.
Yeah, me too. We only have so much time, though, unfortunately.
I'm too busy. You know, wait a minute. There's, you know, I don't have time to watch other people's work. I only want to watch mine. Do you have any films in the works?
Oh, yes. I did a spec script, and I can't talk too publicly about it, but it did get accepted for a nonfiction type of, well, it's based on a nonfiction story, but hopefully that's going to get green-lighted and be made into a fairly large film, but the spec script I did for that did get past the gate and got accepted. So that's one thing that's in the works. I'm also developing a feature. It's kind of plays like a Conan type move story set in the Viking Age. It's the best way I can describe it in like one sentence. But it's definitely kind of dark edged, kind of like real gritty fantasy of a film type that we really haven't seen in a long time. And I'm working to get that to a green light stage. And then the other project I'm really excited about is I am going to direct a short fantasy film that's based on H. David Blaylock's book Ascendant. And it takes a key moment out of his book and kind of we figure out a way that we can do a self-contained short film around this epical clash that takes place in that book. And we're going to really try to make a real high production value, about 15-minute short film based on that. And we're going to shoot that in the late summer, early fall.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. That's kind of exciting. Is that the one Alan is supposed to be in?
It could well be. And it's we do have a working title. It's called Sword Bearer. One word, sword bearer, and so that's the title that David really likes, and so that's the one that Alan, if we can work things out, he may well be in.
Excellent. I want to be there to make fun of him. I'm sorry. Moving on. I know Alan personally. Everybody, calm down. I don't want to get 500 emails about that. Okay. All right. Okay, well, we don't have a whole lot of time. Well, we've got about 15 minutes, and this is kind of the part of the show where we do more of a personal type of thing, and you get to tell us where we get all your stuff and everything. So which one do you like better, writing, podcasting, or filmmaking?
Everything comes from a writing basis, and I say, even when I'm doing filmmaking, it comes from writing. It comes from the screenwriting. That's the blueprint from which all else proceeds, for me. And, so for me, writing is definitely that's where you get your playground, as you called it, that's where the imagination flows.
Uh-huh.
And so for me, that's definitely takes priority.
Excellent. Yeah. I kind of figured that a lot of people, I was talking to somebody, a couple years ago, and who did multiple type projects as well, and they did writing and some other things, but their favorite thing was actually artists, or actually working, because that's where their world came from. The visions of their world came from was actually artistry. And I was like, and for writers, I think writers get their artistry from the word, not exactly from the pen and paper, the pencil and paper, so that kind of thing.
Oh, yes. And, it also ties to the deeper, image or idea or whatever you want to call it that's in your head, that gets, described in the writing. And so, yeah, it's definitely rooted there, too.
Cool. Excellent. You have got the coolest promotion thing that I think I've ever seen. as a tomboy in my youth, I collected cards, especially the Star Wars fantasy cards in the bubblegum packs. I don't know. I don't know your age, but those were around when I was a child, and I just loved collecting those kind of fantasy type cards. You have got a collection of fantasy cards. First of all, let's talk about your artist, I guess. Who does all your artwork? Because it is phenomenal. It is just as good as your writing. It holds up. You really it kind of dovetails together in a really beautiful way.
Matthew Perry, and I just think the world of the guy. He is just a great guy, great fantasy artist, and we work so well together. And he has indicated he is all about doing the rest of the series and getting the artwork done for them. But yeah, he's definitely somebody very, very special.
Yeah, well, Mr. Perry has got my vote. He really does, because he's managed to take your cover art is phenomenal. Which is always a big deal, in especially in small press. You've got to have people pick up the book off the table. Something's got to make it look good. it's absolutely beautiful. It really is. And you've done this collecting card set, which I think is brilliant. Brilliant. I kept them. I put them away in little plastic Ziploc bags, so when you become famous,
Well, I hope to do well enough that maybe they'll be worth something for you. I hope someday.
And just as an idea, like going, all right, yeah. Seriously, I need this idea. Really, give me some trading cards. But you, how did you get the idea for those cards?
Basically, just from being a collector myself, both in sports sports cards and non-sports cards. I always enjoyed, you know, collectible cards, and I also wanted something that I could, you know, give people, not just a, you know, like a flyer or something, but something that not only, you know, raises awareness of the book series, but something they can keep, you know, something worth keeping, something that's collectible, something that, you know, is nice, that I could, you know, give away at, you know, conventions or book signings. And so the idea kind of evolved from there as kind of like a natural outgrowth of the fact that we had a lot of artwork. And I thought, oh, okay, we've got a lot of artwork and looking for something nice we can get people. Well, maybe we can do a little collectible card series and, you know, in between the books, you know, keep building the card set as each new book comes out.
Excellent. Yeah, because it's brilliant. I loved it.
Yeah, they get scooped up off convention free tables really quickly. So I've noticed, they get wiped out a few times. I have to kind of replenish them a little bit, but they appear to be kind of popular because we didn't want to clutter them up. We, you know, the facings of them are just the artwork. And so they are a nice little art piece in itself. And, you know, and they're full color, they're glossy. And, you know, in the back, of course, has information about what the image is, where it came from, and, you know, and the way, you know, we do have a little small image of the book covers and so forth. So yeah, people, if they're interested, can find out more. So yeah, they do, you know, they do serve the, you know, kind of in a promotional capacity, but yeah, they're definitely collectible.
Are you going to do them for the films as well?
I don't know exactly what, you know, like I said, if I ended up doing like a film series, it would be definitely something I would look at doing. Like a franchise. Like if this character that I have in this, you know, this Viking Age feature I told you about, I do have a character that I do want to design to, you know, possibly be somebody I can even do, you know, novels or short stories about, and also, you know, maybe do future movies about. And in that sense, yeah, I mean, that would be definitely worthwhile, you know, if you were doing like kind of a franchise kind of approach.
It could be. Well, you know, one of the things I've talked about at cons and professionally, and been called to actually do professional talks on, is personal branding. And I tell people, find out whatever works for you and do that. And I, you know, not that I'm telling you what to do, but I think it really works for you. Trust me. I love it.
Thank you. Well, it's fun. I enjoy it.
It's absolutely brilliant. I love it. I love it. I love it. Okay, so what is your favorite literary genre? Like we didn't already know. But, you know, what is your favorite literary genre? Just any genre on the planet, what is your favorite?
I'm going to sound so repetitive. Epic fantasy is my favorite genre. And under that umbrella, that can be space opera, that can include epic urban fantasy or medieval fantasy. So, you know, when I say epic fantasy, when I use that term, I'm not just referring to, you know, kind of a Lord of the Rings kind of setting. You know, it can be past, present, or future set, but epic scale fantasy.
Yeah, it's okay to sound repetitive. Some of us really love epic fantasy. No, really,
yeah.
Not kidding. We love epic fantasy. Like, some of us just really get into the whole epic fantasy thing. Like, we're just really one with it. Not, you know, moving on from there. Just saying.
That's
some of us really like it. However, it is a tome. I'm not kidding, people. 600 pages. Moving on. Okay. What haven't you written yet that you would like to write?
I won't give away too much, but I've started sketching it out. But I've got one series set in the modern day, one series set in the medieval kind of setting, and logical conclusion would be to do one of these big Odyssey kind of stories in kind of a future setting. So so something, you know, that wouldn't be hard science fiction, but something that would be more of a, you know, more of a futuristic high technology kind of space opera kind of environment. But that would be the other big project that I would like to bring to port someday.
I haven't heard of a new space opera since Star Wars.
Yeah, I know there's, you know, like I said, I mean, everybody thinks of that when you mention, you know, the word space opera. And, but, you know, so that's, you know, that's kind of the, you know, the environment that I would like to work in, something like that with multiple worlds and, you know, focuses on, you know, more of the fantastical aspect rather than, you know, like a hard science kind of approach.
Yeah, because hard science, that's so much research. You know,
and you could get it wrong, you know, like I said, especially if you're trying to predict the future, you know, that's a very tough thing to do. So, I wouldn't want to have something that stumbles because it becomes dated because something comes out well before this, or technology evolves in a totally different direction, and then it kind of hurts, your series. Where if you leave it a little bit more fantastical, I think it can have more of a life and staying power.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I have to be honest with you about that.
Yeah.
Now, this is another kind of reaching question. You read vigorously. I know you do.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think is missing in our literary world today? I try to ask this question of every author I have on. What do you think is missing in the literary world right now?
To be honest with you, I think that, I think we've gotten so much toward in fantasy, the anti-hero and things like that. I think we've lost track that, there can be some nobility, and there are some decent people out there. There is people with a little bit of honor to them. And I think that, in the general overall trends, I mean, we've kind of, gotten away from that. And I'd like to see a little bit more of a presence of a little bit more, a little bit more of a, not that things are divided in pure black and white in terms of good and evil, but in terms of not things that are so gray that we don't have a concept of nobility and decency and things like that.
I happen to agree with you, especially in the fantasy genres. That whole, I call it the the lethal weapon problem, where oh, goodness, what Mel Gibson's character was this anti-hero. It was the first anti-hero I'd ever seen, at least that I remembered. And it kind of took off from there, and now everyone is an anti-hero.
We're all shades of gray. Nobody's perfect, and I'm sure there's nobody's pure evil. There's redemptive aspects, but things do tilt one way or the other, I think. And people can be generally good, or there's some people that are generally tilting bad, and I think that's the thing that I think that has been shied away from. And it's not just that the there's definitely shades of lighter gray and shades of darker gray, and I think that's kind of what I'm getting at.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it kind of came to a culmination in Constantine, the movie Constantine, in the graphic novel Constantine, where he was really a bad guy, but yet he was trying to save the world. That whole chaotic evil with lawful good tendencies.
That's a good way to put it.
I know, I have such a talent for that, but that whole chaotic evil with lawful good tendencies, I think it has really run its course. What do you think is one of the positive things going on in literature today?
The fact that people are opening up to just a broad amount of things. I mean, you're not boxed in anymore. I mean, with the involvement of steampunk and the involvement of, the epic fantasy and medieval fantasy is taking in more different cultures and worlds in terms of what it's, based off of. You're seeing a lot more things based in a Middle Eastern type culture or an Asian culture. In urban fantasy, there's a wide spectrum. I just like the fact that fantasy is not as boxed in as it used to be. It's not, you definitely can go pretty much any direction now that you want.
Absolutely, and I like that as well. And I think that runs across genre, not just us, but everybody else. It runs across genre. You have put out a few short stories, and I think maybe the next project that will actually be out will be your short story for steampunk. You and I are sharing, are in the same anthology.
I am excited, and that's indeed an honor. I am really, because... Yeah, everything that I have seen by Kerlach is just awesome, and so I am. Yeah, it's an honor to be on an anthology, and I'm looking so much forward to Dreams of Steam. That is going to be great.
It is Dreams of Steam. I'm not sure exactly when it's going to be out yet. We're all getting our contracts in and everything else, but hopefully Dreams of Steam will be out. It will probably be out before Dragon Con, because I know we're going to Dragon Con to promote it. And I'm excited. I'm actually in it too, and I am totally in it. My submission, and I didn't cheat at all, because trust me, the editor of this one is tough, and so I'm excited. I haven't read your story yet, so I took myself off the committee because I didn't want to influence anybody. So I took myself off the committee, and I was like, I was so excited. I'm in there with Steve. There's a lot of big names in that book.
Oh yeah, I don't know the whole group yet, so you know, I'm not leaving anybody out. But I do. I am aware that Nick Valentino made it, and I am aware that David Blaylock made it, and both of them I know are. I mean, everything they write's fantastic. So you know, that's. You're definitely right. It's going to be a really exciting anthology.
It really will, and I'm hoping it does really well and gets everybody where they need to be. Well, where can we find you, Mr. Zimmer, about, you know, your website and Facebook and all that wonderful stuff? Where can we find you?
Facebook, it's pretty easy to find me. I'm just facebook.com/ S-G, G as in George, Zimmer, Zimmer.com. And please add me, because that's the definite way that I like to connect with people. My name is my website, so it's StephenZimmer.com. And Stephen is spelled with a P-H. And last name, again, is Zimmer. And then you can also, get stuff. If you want to get, like, signed books and stuff, you can get those through my publisher and get them personally inscribed, because my editor actually lives in Lexington, which is a beautiful thing for working on these things. But it's Amanda DeBoard. I should do a shout-out for Amanda DeBoard, my editor. But it's 7thstarpress.com. And, again, SEVENTHSTARPRESS.com. And so, yeah, that's how you can find me.
Yeah, it's very nice for being here. Yes, you can have the toy since you've been staring at it the whole time. Thank you very much, Mr. Zimmer, for being here. I will see y'all next week.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Missa.
We are off the air. Thank you, Steve. That was awesome. We managed to get through all of it. I was like, I don't know if we're going to get through
it. We barely made it.
Yeah. Oh, we're going to get through all this because, wow, there was a lot of stuff. That was awesome, babe. That was rock.
You had 2 seconds to spare. No, that was fun. That was fun. We covered a broad gamut, so I appreciate that.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, hey, babe, I am all about promoting as many people as possible to, especially, you know, that whole extraordinary topic thing and getting out of the norm and finding where you need to be is a big deal to me.
Yeah.
Big deal. So I appreciate it, babe. You go and have a great book signing. Yeah, I'm gonna go finish up my bio so I can get it into the before I can get my contract in for the anthology submission.
Yeah, I gotta send mine off tomorrow. That's on my list of things to do. So, but thank you so much for the opportunity. I really, really do appreciate it.
Absolutely. I'll send you the website link later on today.
All right, sounds good. And I will. You'll should get a few more views from people that know me and all that. So.
I appreciate it. Well, awesome, babe. I will talk to you later.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.